Welcome back to Top of the First with Cliff Connors. Plenty to discuss this week as both the Dodgers and the Golden Eagles kick their seasons into high gear. Overall, the Dodgers sit at a decent 12-9 atop the NL West, but they haven't totally hit a stride so far. Except Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is playing pretty much perfect baseball right now. More on that later. For Cal State LA Baseball, they've played three more CCAA series since we last talked, and to discuss that and a whole lot else, we at Golden Eagle Radio are very excited to deliver you the first guest appearance on the show. On Monday, I spoke with head coach Vince Baron-Healy about a range of topics, from the shuffled starting rotation and their pitch repertoires, to Reader Field's very hitter-friendly attributes, to his friendship with Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers. Just before we get to that, here's some context. They're 6-6 since the last episode, losing the series to Monterey Bay, beating East Bay, and splitting with Sonoma this past weekend. All right, let's get to it. Here at Top of the First, we are welcoming the head coach of the Golden Eagles, Vince Baron-Healy, for a sit-down interview. Welcome to the show, Coach.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right, we can start with a general look at the team. It's the best start to this point in the season in 6 years. You're averaging exactly 7 runs per game, but have a team ERA of 6.08. The team's 19-19 on the year and 6th in the CCAA, which means you're in the playoff picture. How do you feel about the year so far?
We're hitting our stride right now. I don't think that our pitching numbers there show you a great deal of what we accomplished here in the last 3 weeks. They're really taking off on the mound, and it really gives us hope to get down into the stretch run to get in that conference tournament.
And then more than half the roster to start the year, they were newcomers. It was mostly transfers, and as a result, some of the top batters on the team are in their first season with LA. I'm thinking of catcher Malik Clayton, third baseman Elijah Jackson. He came from Chico State. Outfielder Isaiah Marquez, and second baseman Javi Espinoza. Did you expect these newcomers to play as large of a role as they have?
We went out and we're not happy where we finished a year ago, and we wanted to make some changes and do some things. And we had a new coaching staff a year ago, and that's kind of been one of the issues that I've had to deal with here is that we've had a great deal of turnover. So I'm on my fourth pitching coach in 4 years, and this finally getting in a little camaraderie with the coaching staff. My assistant Richie Escalera is now in his third year, and he's a great recruiter, and he should get all the credit for finding those guys.
So when you talk about the coaching turnover, is that mostly like new guys this year or new guys last year that we're still getting accustomed?
It's been new every year for the last 4 years. We lost a coach just before COVID, a pitching coach, and then I had hired a coach who was to come in and a great ex-professional coach, Cal State Fullerton, and he decided the day before school started that he wasn't going to do it after committing in June. So that left us in a tough bind to try to find a pitching coach at that time. And so the best available coach was Richie Escalera, my assistant coach. He's really my hitting coach, and because of his recruiting abilities. So I hired him because there were no quality pitching coaches out there at that time. And I've kind of now handed over the hitting to him, and I took over pitching for the 1 year, and then I had another coach for a year, and I'm on my third coach, again, three straight years, three new pitching coaches. It's been tough.
Mm-hmm. And, you've been at Cal State LA for a while. Was these past few years, was it different before that? Did you have a lot of consistency in your time at Cal State LA?
My first 5 years, I had I only have one paid assistant coach for 35 players, and that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. So I've always had a pitching coach because hitting is my forte. And I had my first pitching coach that I hired. I had him for 5 years, and then he went off, got a better job at a Division I school. And then the next guy I hired, I had another great pitching coach, and he was with me for 6 years. And then he got another job and moved off. And, not to say it doesn't pay much to be an assistant coach at a Division II school. So the third coach I found was from out of the area, and he didn't have the recruiting ties and the things that you need to be successful recruiting-wise, and we hit a little bit of a slump there in those years, and then COVID hit and all of the other things that transpired. So it's been hard to keep, a collective staff together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, right now, especially with hitting, you guys are really strong this year. What are your thoughts on the offense as a whole?
They've been pretty solid. We started out really well. We started out the year really hot, swinging the bat. And of late, we haven't swung the bat. It's been kind of the way our season has gone a little bit. When you look at us as being a .500 team, is that we swung the bat really well early and didn't pitch. And then we start to pitch, and now our hitting's backed off a little bit. And in between there, we didn't play great defense. So it's kind of almost epitomizes what a 500 team looks like. But we're showing signs of getting the offense going again, and the pitching staff, again, has really taken off.
Yeah, no, as I've looked at those team stats cumulatively, you know, you saw the team average runs per game. It was super high to start the year. And, you know, it's still been pretty good, but it's dropped off a little as the team ERA started out high and then has lowered. So, you know, if you can time those up.
It'd be great. That's the plan going into the tournament.
Awesome. Yeah, and so specifically one of your newcomers, Malik Clayton, he's the team leader in every percentage stat. That's batting average, slugging, on base, and obviously as a result, OPS. He's top 15 in the CCAA in all those categories, and those are great numbers, especially for a catcher. He's appeared in 36 of 38 games, making 32 starts, but obviously sometimes as a designated hitter to give him rest. I saw that he took the entire East Bay series off defensively. Was that strategically for rest, or were you being careful about a potential injury he had?
He got injured, and he rolled his ankle in a practice play that and it looked pretty bad. We didn't think we'd have him at all that week. And he said there was no way I was going to be able to keep him out of the lineup. So he taped up and wore a brace on top of that and limped around. He wasn't himself, but it was still great to have him out there. So the injury really caused that. And he's been a great surprise for us, really. I mean, we expected him to be one of our two guys. We brought in two catchers, and the other one was probably expected to maybe be a little bit better receiver. A little less of a bat, but he hit left-handed. So we, you know, generally speaking, if I've got two catchers, I like to play them both half and half and keep them both fresh so that we're going in there. And the other catcher had an injury, Chino Nunez, and he had an injury that kept him out the first month of the year. And so we played our third-string catcher, who's a freshman, which was great to get him a little bit of playing time. And Chino's finally started to come back, and he's had a couple issues here or there too. So it's really fallen on Malik's lap there to really carry us, and he has he's done that.
Yeah, he's really come through. How do you plan to moderate Clayton's workload behind the plate going forward? Obviously, with the series, you got the doubleheader, so it's a lot of work for a catcher.
We gave him we ended up playing two doubleheaders this past weekend because of the weather. Yeah. So we played him in game one, gave him game two off, played him in game three. And then he said he was good to go in game four, so we let him go. We were just getting to where we were actually catching him in all four. We kind of broke him in there. He went 2-2 early, then he went 3-1, and we were just going to all four games, which isn't easy. It's taxing, and I know it would be challenging for him. But then he had that roll-up injury at practice. So we again backed him off. He had the week off. Then he went three last week. We'll see if he can get going back to four this weekend.
So is that the end goal eventually after that ankle injury is an afterthought to have him start all four games at catcher?
It's gives us the best offensive abilities if we keep him in the lineup. And if we pull him and DH him, we get, you know, I end up having to, well, if I want to put him in late, pinch hit for the other catcher, we now lose the DH, and I have to have a pitcher hit.
Yeah.
So our pitchers will tell you that's fine, but that's they like to hit, but they're certainly not as good as the other players. So just for us offensively right now, I think it makes more sense to play him every day.
And for that DH spot, when you have Malik Clayton playing as catcher, do you have a specific designated hitter, or is that a rotating staff?
You know, the DH is the guy who's swinging the hot bat. Mm-hmm. Actually, this last weekend, we had Drew Porter be our DH, and he had four at-bats in the whole entire year. Our Monday practices, which I just finished right now, is related to the guys who don't get to play on the weekend. So it's the pitchers who didn't pitch, the position players who maybe weren't on the travel squad, or guys that just didn't get any at-bats on the weekend. And Drew hadn't made any trips all year, but every Monday he just started showing signs that he was really swinging the bat well, swinging the rep well. So he made the travel roster, and I gave him the game one start. He got two hits and knocked in four, got a big hit in the last game on Sunday. So, you know, you want to reward. If you're going to have practice and do things for a purpose, and the purpose is to keep our arms in shape and get guys a better look, he showed that he was swinging the hot bat, and he earned the right to start, and he ran with it.
And so I'd love to walk through your starting rotation. Over the last 2 weeks, your starting rotation, you've used Owen Hunt, Miles Halligan, Holden Hungerford, and Eric Navarrete. Can you talk about their pitch repertoires?
Yeah, they're all a little bit different. We've been going with the freshman Hungerford on, mm-hmm. on Fridays. He's a crafty left-hander, as they like to call him. He's not an overpowering guy. He's throwing 80 miles an hour. Great feel for a changeup and a breaking ball, and absolutely no fear. So, you know, we've been able to get him. The rotation really got kind of moved around because of weather and some of the other things, and we haven't been able to get certain guys back out to the front end of it. But Holden's been doing a great job for a freshman. He's got composure and character, and you know, he's going to get hit every once in a while, but we're hoping that they hit it at guys. So, but he's a fastball, changeup, breaking ball guy, curveball, who really, really competes and can throw all three pitches in any count, which, you know, and for whatever reason, people can't hit left-handers. I'd like to have a whole staff of left-handers if I could find it out, but they're hard to find. Let's see. In game two, we've been going with Navarette, Eric. Eric, he was one of our starters a year ago and didn't have a great year. And he started out the year as one of our starters. When we made the trip to Hawaii, we had six games in 4 days. Yeah. That was, you know, really difficult on an opening weekend to do that. And he didn't pitch well there, and then he didn't pitch well in his next start, so we relegated him to the bench, to the bullpen. And he, again, continued to fight his way, much like we just talked about with Drew, hitting-wise. On those Mondays, he started to really perform again, and he pitched well out of the bullpen, and then we worked his role back into the starting rotation. He's given us two great starts in a row, going five, six innings, which for a guy who's only gone two or three, that builds up hard. It's hard to build that back up. So we're hoping next outing he can get to seven, and we'll see where that goes. But he's got a little better arm. He's a 88, 90-mile-an-hour fastball guy, throws a slider and a changeup. So he's a three-pitch mix guy, but he'll probably rely on his fastball more than anything else. Game three, which has been the seven-inning game, has been Owen Hunt. Owen's been a mainstay in the program. He was, he should have been conference pitcher of the year 3 years ago when he was 7-1, but lost out to a Pomona pitcher who they had won the conference. And, of course, that's what happens, you know. And then he comes back the next year and really kind of fought through some health issues, but didn't have a great year by his standards. And then this year he got off to a really slow, probably the worst start he's ever had, and really struggled and just kept plugging along and fighting and found his form again. He is a fastball, curveball, change, slider. He'll even mix speeds on his fastball. He's got great arm side length. There's a two-seam and a four-seam, so the ball will run in on right-handers, and he can cut it a little bit, make it run in on left-handers. Really, really crafty, but he really struggled with command this year and control, and he's found his last – he's gone at least 15 straight innings, scoreless innings. He went seven innings complete game 2 weeks ago, and then on Sunday, yesterday, he went eight shutout innings, gave up three hits, walked two or three, where he's been walking, boy, I'll tell you, he was walking eight, nine guys a game, and so it's very so unlike of him, you know. But it's great for him to get back out there and really show his form. And then, let's see, who is our fourth guy? We've got
Miles Halligan.
Miles has been a hot and cold guy. He's got great stuff. He's got fastball, curveball, change as well. He's also 90, you know, and his downside has been he's beaten himself. He has just a little bit of a mental lapse there for a batter or two, and then he'll get the hit, you know. So he's kind of beaten himself, but he's got great stuff, and we've got confidence in him that he's going to get through it too.
Do you have a strategy for when you use them, that order that you talked about?
It changes weekly. We like to keep hunting the seven-inning game. When we play these four-game weekends, it's hard to get through a four-game weekend of 28-man roster. So if we have one game that we don't have to get into the bullpen, we like that. So that's Owen. We know he can go seven innings strong and hopefully give us that complete game and give us that game off, so to speak. So we've gone with Holden, the freshman, on Fridays. I think this week we may mix that up a little bit. We're trying to prepare to get into the conference tournament. So, because we'll have a different rotation there, but it takes moving guys up every week, and he can't go on 2 days short rest. We can go on 1 day short rest and be okay. But if you know, if we start moving guys up 2 days and we don't pitch well, we're going to find ourselves not in the conference tournament. So we're really careful about how we go about doing that.
Yeah. So as I was going to ask about this, and you sort of touched on it, that doubleheader on Saturday usually means that last game is only seven innings. Do you like to put Owen Hunt in there just so you can cover the whole thing, or have you explored some other, like, that's what you've done the last few weeks, but have you also explored, like, other ways of covering those seven innings, like bullpens, or is it the starter?
Owen's been the guy that we've put out there every time. Now, we played the seven-inning game the last game this week, and we really felt like we were in a must-win in game one yesterday, and so we wanted to give the ball to Owen there. So it's a Sunday, which means he's going to be on short rest this week, coming back to the seven-inning game on Saturday. Then maybe the following week we can talk about moving him up to the one spot again. So we have absolute confidence in our bullpen. Our bullpen has been so good this year with guys like Joel Martinez has been outstanding. Diaz has been unbelievable out of the bullpen. Jox has had his spells. I mean, we're deep there. And this is really the first time in my career here that we've had pitching depth. So we're not afraid. If we get in that tournament and can, even if we get beaten and get in the loser's bracket, we have enough pitching to get through it. So we're, you know, we just have to get there. We know that's
the single elimination game.
Yeah, because we don't see ourselves finishing in the top two. So we're going to be in that first round single elimination, which is why we've got to get Owen up to the front of that rotation at some point. That's the goal.
Your game one starter, yeah. Do you anticipate that the rotation will shift much from its current setup? I know there's been some guys that have gotten some starts throughout the year, like Dorsey Chatham, he had six, and Jorge Romero had three, Brent Jox and Anthony Lopez with two each.
I don't see it changing right now. It's not to say that it won't happen, and if somebody could get hurt, anything could happen. But I think the guys that we have in the bullpen now have found their niche in there. And, you know, we, unlike most schools, when they go into their bullpens, they get worse. We go into our bullpen and we get better. So you've probably seen that we've come back in a lot of games where we've been behind early. We've had, I think, two or three games where we were down seven, eight runs early in the game, and we get into our bullpen, but then we start hitting and we get into their bullpen, and we just wear their bullpen down, and we continue to get better as the game goes on. So our bullpen is strong, and we know that, you know, a lot of those guys can bounce back on no rest. You know, they can throw back-to-back days, and as long as they don't go too many pitches. But we don't see the rotation really changing, and the guys that are in the bullpen understand their roles and have really kind of blossomed in that role. So we're pretty set on that rotation, but you get into a tournament and you could get in five and six games deep. So, you know, might have a rotation. You might have a bullpen day. You might have a spot starter day, because we do have that guy too. So,
yeah. So when we're talking about bullpen positions, I'm thinking about closers. You know, you mentioned Joel Martinez. He has five saves. Anthony Diaz has four. Do you anticipate that one of them will take on a full-time closer role, or do you still think of that as a rotation?
It's not necessarily a rotation. Joel's saves have been three-inning saves. Mm-hmm. So where he'll take the ball in the seventh and go seventh, eighth, and ninth and get earn the save. He hasn't done as many one-inning saves. You know, Diaz has done our one-inning saves. He's been that guy that we'll just hand the ball to in the ninth inning and say, go get it. But Joel's done a great job of that. That's where he's saving that bullpen. He goes three innings on Friday. He can come back on Sunday and do another three. So he could throw three innings on Friday, throw one on Saturday, and one on Sunday. He's just that, you know, versatile. So it's he's an interesting guy to have in the bullpen. It's kind of rubber arm.
Yeah. So Joel, he's the guy for finishing out the game, and then your one inning save, your closer there will be Anthony Diaz going forward.
Usually, yes. Yeah.
Well, you've got a big series against Cal Poly Pomona coming up this weekend. They're third in the standings. They rely on pitching a little bit more than you guys do. They got an ERA of 5.09. They're averaging around 6.5 runs per game. And their starting rotation specifically includes two pitchers in the top five of the CCAA ERA leaders. They've got Reese Stevens at 3.27 and the top ERA guy in the CCAA, Caleb Reyes, at 2.34. How are you prepping for that?
Well, we took a lot of BP today. We know who they are. We've seen them every year. Their ERAs are really high for them. I mean, they're usually in the threes, and they're ballpark is very pitcher-friendly, unlike ours, which is hitter-friendly. So those numbers are kind of inflated there. Our whole conference this year, pitching-wise, has been different. And it's the Friday games that are 22 to 18, and it's been crazy to watch the hitters beat up on pitchers this year. It's been really rather interesting. But that being said, you know, obviously we know that they're going to attack the strike zone. They don't beat themselves. We're going to have to beat them. We're going to come out swinging this weekend.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you mentioned this rise in offense this year, do you have any ideas for what could be causing that, or do you think that's just the way the years go?
I've looked for it. I don't know. I mean, they've raised the strike zone. They've done some things there. People are pitching more at the top of the strike zone, and college pitchers aren't as good as the professional pitchers at really reaching the top of that strike zone. If you're trying to get to the top of the strike zone and you don't get there and leave it about belt high, it's a little bit of trouble. And I think hitters are really taking advantage. And hitters nowadays have no fear. Now, you look at Major League Baseball and they strike out. It's okay to strike out, but they're going to get in their three swings. I don't have that answer, to tell you the truth, but it is happening all across the country, really.
Yeah, and so when you talk about, you know, preparing for the pitching of Pomona, do you have a strategy that you're developing for the pitching to Pomona?
We obviously do a lot of scouting, and we break down film, and we've seen them play in person 5-6 times. We might even see them on Tuesday night. They play down in San Diego. We'll probably run down there and get a fresh late look at their hitters, and they'll also be throwing all their bullpen guys, so it's a chance for us to really see all their bullpen guys, which we've seen too. We'll have a plan in place, but we'll pitch to our strengths, not their weaknesses more. You know, I mean, we could try to do things that we don't do, and that's not going to do us any favors. So we're going to pitch to our strengths, and if they make the adjustment and hit us, so be it. But again, like I said, the last few weeks have been pretty good, and I think our guys have really come into their own on the mound. So. You know, it's going to have to be an offensive weekend for us, and we know that, and we'll be motivated and ready to go.
Awesome. Yeah, so at this point in the interview, I want to move on to some questions, just general ones about your coaching style. You were a player in the Dodgers minor league system. How does your experience as a player influence your coaching style?
I think coaches are sponges. You know, I think we beg, borrow, and steal from everybody that we've ever been around, you know, we always want new ideas, and you have to stay young in this game. And so there isn't one person in particular who has really influenced my style. All of my experience of being around so many different coaches and being able to talk and communicate with them and get along with them and pick their brain, so to speak. I mean, I talk about I actually started here. My first coaching job was here at Cal State LA. And then I went to UCLA for 15 years, where I coached under longtime legendary coach Gary Adams, who had to share an office. They asked him if he'd be okay sharing an office with John Wooden. And he said, well, if I have to, I'll do that. And, you know, and so I got to spend a lot of time with Coach Wooden and, you know, just talk about making great human beings, you know, ultimately when it comes to that end. And then I got an opportunity to spend a lot of time with Mike Gillespie and Frank Cruz, guys that are, you know, Mike Gillespie is a legendary college baseball coach at USC and junior college coach. So I've just been around everybody that has done that. And when I came up in coaching, it was really a camaraderie. To be a coach, you were a part of a family of coaches, and mm-hmm. everybody shared ideas and concepts, and now it's gotten a lot more secretive. Unfortunately, and I try to tell the younger coaches nowadays, I go, you missed out on a good time, you know, of just sharing ideas and trying to get better, and not everybody's kind of trying to protect themselves. But there's not one person in particular, but the whole evolution of the game and watching it change and you know, the shifts and all the things that have happened over time. You know, yeah, I'm open to all ideas, you know, so we jump on all of them.
Yeah, so you touched on recruiting a bit earlier in the interview. So how do you approach building a strong team dynamic within the confines of, you know, there's a lot of turnover within college baseball?
Boy, it's gotten more difficult, but baseball in particular, you know, you build from the middle out, You know, you're going to find your pitchers. You start with your pitchers, your catchers, your shortstops, your center fielders. That's your mainstay in recruiting, and then you won't survive unless you get those guys. But we're trying to get more depth pitching here. This is a difficult place to recruit pitchers because of the field. It is a very, very offensive field in so many aspects. So, you know, we're just starting to get the pitching now. We've got a good young pitching coach who's really bringing a fresh set of ideas and things to have these players develop, you know, and development is the hard part. You know, we don't have as much time as we used to have. There are NCAA rules and limitations on times and what you can and can't do. So trying to be efficient at doing all that stuff and make our guys get better through the course of a year and the course of 2 or 3 years, you know, is really the challenging part. But I think that, you know, we're building from the middle out. The transfer portal is an interesting thing now. I should call it a thing because it doesn't necessarily help Division II baseball. It hurt if you get a really good player. You know, we had AJ Salgado 2 years ago and was a great hitter as a freshman. Hit, you know, close to 400 and led the conference in stolen bases. I think he was newcomer of the year of the conference. And the day before the last day to get in the transfer portal, he calls me, "Yeah, I'm going to go Division I." He ends up at UCLA. You know, good for him. But, you know, in July 15th, I can't replace an A.J. Salgado. You know, so now we're out chasing that, and you're behind the eight ball a little bit when it comes to that stuff. The transfer portal, while their name's in there, everybody thinks they're Division I players. And I'll tell you what, our conference is as good as all the lower Division I schools and the conferences across the country that junior college coaches are telling to go there. And it's sad that they don't stay around here a little bit more often. So, but that's the recruiting end of it anyway.
Yeah. What role does analytics or technology play in your coaching strategy?
You know, analytics are interesting concept for an old school coach like me. I use them. I've spent a lot of time investigating them. I spent time with a lot of time with Dave Roberts with the Dodgers, and Dave was one of my first college recruits when I was at UCLA. So we're very close friends, and I went out with him when it just started to get really big, and we sat down, and I said, I just want to go through it. I need to learn it now, you know. And he goes, "You're too old to learn it. I got to stop." And so we started going through it. He goes, "But it doesn't play at your level because you don't have a big enough sample size." He goes, "You can get things out of it, and we all do because we all look at stats and those types of things. But all of the analytic stuff like that they do, it's built over 600 at bats in a season, and then our guys get 100. You know, so it doesn't quite play out that way. But we're doing left right matchups, and Tuesday's my day that I get all my updated information. I actually hired, because he doesn't get paid, a student that wants to, his dream is to be a Major League Baseball analytics guy. And so he's now doing it with us. And he'll come in this week and give me all his numbers, and we'll do things out. So you can teach an old dog new tricks. That's not something that – it has its benefits. It does. You still have to have feel and all the other things that go along with baseball. But if the analytics tell you something that you didn't know, it's great. You know, so who's not to look for it? You know, I'm out there looking for it and seeing if it does play. The other thing that analytics are really hard to pinpoint with us, and I went through this with Dave, is that college defense is way different than Major League Baseball defense. If they hit a ground ball, that guy's out.
Yeah.
In college baseball, you hit a ground ball, there's a pretty good chance that guy's on base. Mm-hmm. And in some manner, form, or another, it's either going to get through, they're going to make an error, they're going to throw it away. They're going to do something that you've got an opportunity to. They don't teach anybody to hit a ball on the ground in Major League Baseball. All they want are home runs because of the three-run homer. So, you know, so it's just different. So the analytics will tell you one thing at that level that we can't figure out on ours because it doesn't match up. But I use it. I do.
What kind of numbers do you look for in that analytics meeting on Tuesday?
We'll look at a lot of different walk numbers and you know, we'll break down opposing pitchers hit by pitches, walks, those types of things. Is he a big three-ball count pitcher? We do our own charts during games as well. Ours is more on the fire kind of analytics. I mean, we'll prepare for some, and we'll get some certain matchups that will transpire out of the numbers going, hey, this guy's a good matchup against that guy. Or, you know, let's just – if we get in a pinch hit situation, Emmons is the guy because they're going to be at the right-hander. He throws this pitch. That's his best pitch to hit. You know, so we get all that information. But it's there's actually – and I'm going off on a tangent here. I'm sorry. There's actually an AI program that you can buy that will make out your lineup. I'm going to be an obsolete breed here pretty soon, where you punch in all your numbers into an AI thing, and it will make out the absolute best lineup for the most runs that you can score in a game. And people buy it. Mm-hmm. They buy it here, and it costs them like $5,000 a year, and they don't even do anything but punch in the numbers. They don't have any managerial skills at all.
Yeah, so with this... the technology revolution here, there's so much that can be handled by different software programs. Obviously, the other side of coaching is your interaction with the players, which you touched on. Another factor in coaching I wanted to talk about was, you know, a big story in LA sports recently was Jim Harbaugh coming to town to coach the LA Chargers, and one of the guys he took with him from Michigan was strength coach Ben Herbert. He's been considered by some to be one of Harbaugh's keys to success. Obviously, you coach a different sport. But I was wondering, is physical conditioning and strength training integral to how you coach?
It is, and we've hired an outstanding strength and conditioning man here at Cal State LA in Char. And he works hard. The players love him. He gets after it. They get after it in the weight room. You've got to be healthy and physically strong to get through a 50-game season. It's not easy in our sport. It doesn't appear to be physical. But it is, and the body just has lots of aches and pains and little things that happen throughout the course of a year that, you know, if you're not strong enough, it's gonna knock you right out of the game, and you can't be an all-conference player if you're sitting on the bench because you're injured. You're sitting in the training room. Our training staff also does a great job in keeping us healthy, and you know, knock on wood, you know, we've been lucky thus far. You know, the injuries that we have not been long-term injuries, guys that are out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. They might miss a game here or there. Or, you know, in Malik's case, he had to go to DH from catching. And we do have depth, so it hasn't been a big thing, but it's been great that we've been able to stay healthy this year. And that does go to the strength program and to our training room and, you know, the players themselves, too. They do a much better job now than they used to do back in the old days of taking care of their bodies.
Yeah, so what is the physical conditioning regimen for the players that you run?
Well, we lift twice a week once the season starts. In the off season or the fall, we'll go three times a week. During the season, we'll knock it down to two times a week. We'll lift Monday, Wednesday. So we have the light practice and the lift post. And, you know, most of the pitchers do more running conditioning than anybody because they just need stronger legs than our other guys. But our practices are built around, if they go hard and they do everything right during practice, they're going to physically exert themselves enough to be in shape to play the game. Position players, you know, they run 90 feet, they run 180 feet, then they get to stop and do nothing and look for a sign and those things. So it's not like soccer where they're running up and down, you know, the pitch or a basketball player, you know, running that court the whole entire game. So ours is a little different because there's a lot of rest time and all of our conditioning in practice is built around periods where we'll run for quick spurts and do things like that. So from a conditioning standpoint, that way, you know, we take care of that during practice. We don't actually have to make time and run at practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you look at the trends and splits of the team as a whole, one of the most notable factors I found is the home and away difference. You're the best home team in the CCAA. You've got an 11-4 record. And when you think about the team, would you say this is just a coincidence, or have you seen a boost in the level of play when you're at Reeder Field?
Our field is different, and it takes a certain mindset. I hope nobody outside of Cal State LA is listening to this one. But pitchers don't have success walking in here because they can throw a great pitch, and it could get popped up to right field, and it's a homer. And that generally leads them to making another mistake to walk the next guy because they're still mad about the pop-up for three batters later. Next thing you know, we've put up a five spot, you know, a five-run inning. And our guys understand the concept that, hey, it happens here sometimes. So they're over it really quickly. So we don't generally give up many big innings at home. And that the big innings is what hurts you in baseball. Mm-hmm. You give up single runs here or there, it doesn't generally hurt you. But you start giving up four-run innings and five-run innings and three-run innings. And they add up so fast around here. But everybody is better at home in this conference. Every field in this conference is different. Pomona, so pitcher-friendly, wind blows straight in from right. So it's the polar opposite of our field. They pitch away at home. They get on the road. They pitch away. Their coach is a friend of mine, and he goes, I just hate coming to your place. I said, I'd love to see you come to my place, you know. but it's every park's different. San Francisco's playing in an airport, and San Bernardino's smaller than ours, and it's awful. The infields are bad, or this. Or that. Every field has its own niche, and the home teams know how to play it. And a lot of them will recruit to their field. Mm-hmm. We recruit to our field, to you know, not as much lately as we have in the past. But I tried to build something that we could play in both places, and we haven't quite had that success yet. We're still playing well at home, though.
So yeah, so it's that familiarity you have with the unique ballpark that gives you that advantage with your strategy and your pitchers.
It's just got nooks and crannies. I think it bothers people more than any strategies that we have. You know, I just think it gets to them mentally, and our guys are you know, the home team always has an advantage because you hit last. That's the nature of baseball. But, you know, it's here especially, it's just a different place to play.
Yeah, another factor you see when looking at the team stats, you touched on it a bit earlier, is defense and some error issues. Golden Eagles have committed the most errors in the CCAA, 67 through 38 games and 46 unearned runs. What do you look at when you're trying to address this?
Well, we've been working really hard the last 3 weeks on just shoring up our catch play. Most of our errors have been throwing errors. They haven't been so much fielding errors. They've been throwing errors, throwing across the diamond, and just not securing the baseball. It's a old adage, but if you just play catch, if they get the panic sets in. It's the same thing we talked about with the pitcher who gives up the homer, and then it takes four you know batters later before he's back locked in. With an infielder, he starts to make one bad throw, and that leads to another one mentally, and then they can't get over it, or they don't field it quite cleanly, and they rush in their feet, and they're not in a position to make a throw. So then they have to be more athletic, and they panic and they throw it away. We have put a big emphasis for the last 3 weeks on playing catch and just at all times moving our feet, trying to stay in our legs and do things that are baseball related that they gets away from them. And we've cleaned it up a little bit. We had a pretty good weekend this weekend. I think we made one or two errors on the infield that were, you know, and it's a tough infield to play. It's an infield that they have very soft dirt and they have a lot of bad hops out there. And when that happens, your feet are late when you set up to throw, and our guys did a pretty good job of getting back into it.
Yeah, a positive factor for the Golden Eagles is their speed on the base paths. Cal State LA is their tops in the CCAA in stolen bases, 45 steals, and an 85% success rate. Elijah Jackson is the team leader with 11. Is that a big part of your game strategy?
You know, it's whatever talent we have out there. I like to run. I was a base stealer when I played. I can share a lot of things with the running guys on the team that can run on how to steal bases and do things. So, yes, I like it. I think that I'm a big college football fan, and I was I'm a huge Notre Dame fan for all of you college football people out there. You can boo me later. But when they hired Lou Holtz talked about he was driving down the road, and he saw this huge sign that said speed kills. And he goes, so I decided I need to get a bunch of speed to win. You know, and he ends up winning the national championship with all those guys and everything else. And I think about that a lot. Speed kills, and it just puts different pressure on teams. So if you can run, you know, we've got some guys that have some outstanding speed. I mean, Caden Victorian, he has world class speed. He could run for our track team. He's that fast. He was a 100 meter guy in high school that won the CIF, I believe, and he's just learning how to steal bases now and do some things. And he's got to learn how to hit to get on first base a little bit more to be able to steal. But every time those guys are on, they don't pitch as well to the next batter because they're worried about him getting on. So they're trying to get the ball to the plate faster. Now they're leaving their fastball up in the zone, and we hit that. That's why I really like the pressure of speed. You know, the faster, the quicker your guys are, the more secure that infielder's got to be. And hey, if I better get rid of this ball, and then he throws it away and all those things. So it's an old adage that does play today.
Yeah, it's that added weapon of however you get on base, whether it's a walk, if I pitch, an error, you got that ability to move around, get in scoring position, put more pressure on the pitcher.
Absolutely. And then one of the greatest teams I ever coached, not here, this is when I was at UCLA, we averaged about 17 runs a game, it seemed like. But we blew out everybody. We went to the World Series in 97. It was Troy Gloss and a couple other guys there. But we could play any style of game. And if we needed one run, we had a guy on the bench who was our football tailback. He'd pinch runs before we get a leadoff single. He'd pinch runs, steal second base, hit, game over. So it's just a weapon that allows you to score different ways. And when we get to the bottom part of our lineup, we've got threats down there. And if we can get a two out single, steal a base, and get a bleeder, you know, that's just one run you didn't expect to get. And we've been able to do that quite a bit this year.
Yeah, and as we move towards the end of this interview, you know, this is the first time we've met, first time on the show. Just wanted to check, is there anything else you'd like to speak about or cover on the team? I want to give our listeners a full picture of how you're viewing the year.
We opened up the year in Hawaii, we've learned a lot about ourselves. It's so hard to figure out the personnel and get them put together when you've got a group of 38 young men that you put together in the same room for 3 months. You're going to have family fights and different things that happen along the way. And they've all come together and learned to really enjoy each other and become brothers. And that's kind of where we're ready to make that last leap. And I think if we get those bats going, we're going to make that last leap and make that charge for the playoffs.
Yeah, looking forward to it. How was Hawaii, by the way? I see you're rocking the Hawaiian shirt for baseball right now.
We do. See, we get the logo on there and everything. It was cold and rainy, much like it was around here the whole time. Anytime you go to the islands, it's a great experience. We had so many kids that had never flown before, you know, and so trying to develop men, you know, that's probably the biggest thing that my job entails. I want them to have their degree. I want them to be able to get a job. I want them to be good husbands and great fathers when they get out of here. And I think we have done that in this program probably better than anybody around this conference. And our alumni game is one of the biggest events on campus. We'll have, you know, 200 guys come back to watch us play and to play and just be part of the brotherhood and the family. It's a family atmosphere here when you become a baseball player here, and that's important to me. I tell them all they can hate me when they're playing for me, but if I'm not invited to their wedding, I got something went wrong. So they all know that, we've had a successful run here, you know, and we've had great human beings. We were playing our last home series on Sunday, and one of my former players just got his helicopter license for LAPD and needed a flyover in the middle of the game. He's just doing circles around the field during the game, and our guys rallied a little bit around that. Said, yeah, that's our eagle flying overhead right there.
So, you know, Cal State LA, they a big part of their operation is this upward mobility. Do you think that you buy into that as well with the players and the way you develop it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's important because we have so many, you know, first-time college students and their family and just we're making a better life for them and they're understanding. I mean, they know that they're not supposed to wear a hat indoors. They know, you know, just little things along the way to the development of being a better person and making the world a better place. That's what we're trying to do out there on the baseball field.
And finally, to wrap this up, last question. It's your 17th season here at Cal State LA. What's your favorite moment as head coach?
Oh, man, those are so tough. I mean, if I've had so many firsts here. I remember the first time we went to the conference tournament in my second year here, and we win the game, and And Paul Helms, the sports information director, goes, hey, that's the first game, first conference tournament game ever been won by Cal State LA. I was like, huh? You know, and so that was exciting. We turned around in, what was it, 2013 and won the conference tournament. I think that, you know, that team was an outstanding team. It was the it was when recruiting was a little easier than it is now. We were on the quarter system then, and so we could get players in late. You know, it'd be August, and we could get somebody into school. And we lucked out with a good crop of friends. You know, they were all friends together. They were at different schools. They all decided they wanted to leave at the same time, and they all ended up here. And they ended up winning the conference tournament. And they, I think my greatest moment is watching them have success, you know, and when it's all said and done, when I see them graduate, when I see them do it's just a multitude. You can't put a finger on any one thing in particular because I care about each one of them, you know, and they're all different in their own ways, and we tell that about our family members. They're all different, right? I mean, I'm the last of six kids, and we're all different, you know, and as I tell them about everybody being different, I'm trying to figure out how to get along together with 38 different guys, you know, and all wanting to play, and not everybody's going to play, and it's not that kind of sport where everybody's going to play. You're going to have nine guys playing, and out of the 38, you've got 29 that aren't. So keeping that whole thing happy and learning how to be part of something greater than yourself, I think, is really what we're looking at there.
All right. Well, Coach, thanks for so much for coming on to the show.
Anytime. Have me back.
It was great to have you, and we'll be watching this weekend against Pomona. Good luck.
We'll get that done, and then I'll come back after we win the conference tournament. How's that one sound?
All right. Sounds good.
Perfect.
Thanks again to Coach Baron Healy for talking with me on the show. I'll keep the rest of the show quick because we got a lot from him there. Let's move to the pros and the Dodgers, who are 12-9 on the year and have lost three of their last four series. 12 teams have fewer losses than Los Angeles this year, so they haven't played up to their elite billing so far. But hey, it is mid-April. The time for worrying about the record is months away. The concern now is with the players, some of whom have been fantastic, like Mookie, and some of whom have been worrying, like Chris Taylor. Let's break it down. Mookie Betts, specifically, he's ahead in so many stats. It's unbelievable how good he's been this year. I'm just going to go right through all of his rankings. Third in baseball in batting average at .369, tied for first in hits with Shohei Ohtani and Jose Altuve. He's fourth in dingers with 6, fourth in RBIs with 18, tied with another Dodger, Teoscar Hernandez. First in total bases with 56, one ahead of second place Shohei Ohtani. Tied for second in walks. Third in on-base percentage at .470, not far from .500. Fifth in slugging at .667. Second in OPS at 1.137, and he has almost twice as many at-bats as first place Tyler O'Neill. And as a result of all of that, he is first in the majors in wins above replacement, already at 2.2, a half game more than anybody else. Off to an unbelievable start to the year, and a great piece at the top of the lineup. We expect nothing less from Mookie Betts. On the other hand, there's Chris Taylor, who's struck out 18 times in his first 35 at-bats, and he's 1 for 35. That's an .029 batting average to start the year. The third longest tenure Dodger has put together a nice career, approaching his 1,000th big league game, rocking a .769 OPS and 104 homers across 9 seasons with Los Angeles. But with Dodgers prospect Andy Páez getting elevated and breathing down Taylor's neck, all eyes are on him to turn things around. He's in the third year of a 4-year, $60 million contract he signed with LA after the 2021 season. He was an all-star that year and had a ridiculously clutch postseason, so we'll look to see him return to some of those ways. Overall, the Dodgers may not have the most impressive record at 12-9, but partially thanks to being tied for the most games played this year, they lead in a whole bunch of stat counting categories, including hits, home runs, earned runs, and conversely strikeouts. But they're not just coasting on their games played number. As a team, they're fourth in batting average and slugging, and fifth in on-base percentage and OPS. So, what to watch for this week in LA baseball? Well, the Dodgers host the Mets for a 3-game weekend series, and the Golden Eagles head to Cal Poly Pomona for 4 games over the same 3 days. If you can catch one game from the Golden Eagles this weekend, maybe make it the Friday night series opener, because so far, LA is 6-1 in series openers this season. Alright, that's all I got for you. Thanks for listening, and have a good rest of your week. Till next time.